Now we're holding Tess Amud Bey's the second Mishnah. Continuing in the Ein Din series of Mishnayos, the Mishnah says, now this one and the next one, which is the last Mishnah of the Perek, are going to talk about things having to do with Kodshim. So now like this. We know the Torah tells us that you're not allowed to bring Kodbanis anywhere outside of the Mishnah. The Torah also tells us that we learn from Sukkim that there were different stages in that. There were times, specifically, the Mishkan was set up in the desert, and for 40 years while they were wandering around over there. And during that time, they weren't allowed to bring Korbanos anywhere else. Then they came into Eretz Yisrael and they set up the Mishkan in Gilgal. There, the Mishkan was not really considered the Mishkan full-fledged. It was called a Bama Gdola, as we're going to call it in our Mishnah. A Bama is a place where you bring Korbanos, like a private place where you bring Korbanos. And the Bama Gdola means it was like a big one for the Jewish people collectively, but it's still, in other words, the point is that at that time, you were allowed to have Bama Sakanis, you were allowed to have private Mizbechis in other places. The idea being that it's only really a full-fledged Mishkan when the Oren is together with the Mishkan, and during those 14 years it wasn't because they were taking it around wherever they were going to fight a war during those 7 years when they were conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael. The Oren was not necessarily always in the Mishkan. So therefore, it was considered a Bama Gdola, meaning that you were allowed to bring Korbanos elsewhere. Good morning, Jacob. Then they put the Mishkan in Shiloh, and it stayed there for 369 years. During that time, the Oren was there with it. Therefore, Korbanos anywhere else were also. It wasn't a Bama Gdola. It was a full-fledged Mishkan. Then after Shiloh was destroyed, you had 57 years when the Mishkan was first in Noiv and then in Givon, where again the Oren was separated. First it was captured by the Plishtim, then it was in the city of Kiryas Yearim, then David brought it to Yerushalayim. So during all that time, again, the Mishkan had the dinim of Bama Gdola, and you were allowed to bring Korbanos elsewhere. And then the Beis Mikdash was built in Yerushalayim, and as we're going to say in the next Mishnah, from then on, you're never allowed to bring Korbanos anywhere else. So that's the history as far as bringing Korbanos elsewhere in a nutshell. So it comes out, in other words, that from when the Mishkan was built, there were only 71 years in which you were allowed to bring Korbanos elsewhere, 14 while the Mishkan was in Gilgal, 57 while it was in Noiv and Givon. Mind you, by the way, the Pesukim tell us over and over in Malachim that even though that's the halacha, nevertheless, people were careless with that for a long time and were bringing Korbanos in other places long after the Beis Mikdash was built. And over and over, the Nevi'im tell us, over and over in Malachim, that so-and-so was a good king by Yasa Yosha Be'ene Hashem, but in his times, the people were still offering on bombers. And so finally, Chizkiyahu put a stop to that, and later on, Yeshayahu, and then later on, Yeshayahu did that again in his time, and then got rid of all those bombers. Anyway, so the Mishnah says, Ein ben Bama Gdola l'Bama Ktana el Pesachim. The only difference during the time when private bombers are allowed, the only difference between the Mishkan, which at that point has the din of a Bama Gdola, versus a Bama Ktana, the individual private Mizbeach that a person has in their house, el Pesachim, the only difference is the Korban Pesach. In other words, the Korban Pesach, even at such times, the Korban Pesach can be brought only on the Bama Gdola, never on a Bama Ktana. In fact, the Rambam, the Sefer HaChinuch lists that as one of the 613 mitzvahs. It seems the Rambam had that in early drafts of Sefer HaMitzvahs and then changed his mind on the grounds of that it's not a mitzvah that applies for all times, once the Beis Mikdash was built, you're not allowed to have bombers anyway. But in any case, the HaChinuch actually counts it. Apparently, he had the earlier version of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs in front of him, and he actually lists this as one of the 613 mitzvahs not to bring the Korban Pesach on a Bamas Yachid, even in a time when Bamas are allowed. Anyway, so the point is, so other Korbanos, a Korban Pesach you can't bring on a private Bama, but other kinds of Korbanos, for example, people's Olos and Shlomim, and whatever you could. And the Mishnah says, Zachval, the general rule, is Kol Sho Nidav and Nidav, any Korban that you can designate with neder and adava, as we learned about those terms the other day, neder where you say hare olai, I obligate myself to bring a korban, or nadava where you say hare zu, where to begin with you say I want this animal to be designated as a korban. So that includes things like orilus and shlomim, korad babama, such korbanos can be brought on bama when bamas are allowed. things that cannot be brought, the neder and the dava, like in a karab abama, cannot be brought on a bama. Now, actually, then that means, in other words, as the Gemara is going to say, that applies not only to a karban pesach. That would also apply, for example, to a chatas or an asham. You can't bring those b'denu and adava either, which the Gemara asks. Sachim b'tuloi, are you telling me the only karban you can't bring on a private bama is a karban pesach? We just said kol she'en a nidav and nidav. So that means, in other words, so it would include that you can't bring a chatas or an asham on a private mizbeach, but it would also include, for example, that what about the korbanos tzibur? It sounds like we're saying that even the korbanos tzibur could be brought on a private mizbeach. So the Gemara says ema kein psachim. You're right. What we mean is anything like the korban pesach, meaning any korban which is. So specifically, we're focusing over here, actually, not so much on the fact that it's not, that you can't bring it b'nedu and a java, like a chatas or an asham. We're focusing on the fact that korban pesach is kavua loizman. There's a fixed time to bring it on erev pesach. So any korban that has any korban that you're required to bring at fixed times, most of the korbanos tzibur, you can't bring on a private mizbeach. In which case, the Gemara says, mani Rav Shimon. In that case, our Mishnah goes like Rav Shimon. During these times when bombers were mutter and when the Mishkan counted only as a bomb of Dola, even then the Tzibur could not bring all the Korbanos, only the Korbanos Pesach and the various Korbanos Tzibur that have a fixed time. So they could bring the Korbanos Tamid, the Korbanos Musaf, those sorts of things. But Rav Shimon says you have obligations that you have to bring, which do not have a fixed time, which are brought by the tzibur. For example, you have the par helam davar shel tzibur, where the Sanhedrin makes a mistake in halacha and the people follow them. So that sort of thing. It's a korban tzibur. It's a korban tzibur, but it doesn't have a fixed time because it takes place whenever such a thing would happen. So Rav Shimon says, hocha v'hocha le'korev, those could not be brought on either the Bama G'dola or the Bama K'tana during those periods. So in other words, according to Rav Shimon, if let's say during the 14 years that the Mishkan was in Gilgal, the Sanhedrin had made such a mistake, they wouldn't be able to bring the Par Halam Davashot Tzibur then. They would have to wait until the Mishkan was reestablished in Shiloh, where now it's not a Bama G'dola, but rather a full-fledged Mishkan again, and then they would be able to bring the korban. Tosfos points out based on other Gemaras that Rav Shimon would also say, for example, that the korbanos of a nazir by the same token can't be brought on private mizbeches because again, no, the korbanos of a nazir are not really b'nedir and adava. I mean, in a certain sense, they are because you volunteer to become a nazir. But once you volunteer to become a nazir, you're required to bring those korbanos. So therefore, still, in other words, Rav Shimon would say that on a bama k'tana, the only, practically speaking, the only things, according to him, that you can bring on a bama k'tana would be oilus and shlomim. And then you have a machlokas in zvachim, whether you can bring menachas. There's a big machlokas tanoim at the end of zvachim, what korbanos exactly you are and aren't allowed to bring on a bama k'tana. But the point is, our Mishnah is following Rav Shimon, who says that there are even some korbanos that you can't bring on the Bama G'dola either. Unlike the Chachamim, who disagree with Rav Shimon and say that Tzibur can bring all their korbanos on the Bama G'dola, and they just say there's limitations on what you can bring on a Bama K'tan. Okay, so the next Mishnah continues further on this topic. Ein bein Shiloh liYerushalayim. Now, there's no difference between when the Mishkan was in Shiloh versus when the Beis Hamikdash was built in Yerushalayim, as far as the dinim of eating korbanos. The difference was when the Mishkan was in Shiloh, you were allowed to eat Kodshim Kalim and Maisa Sheni, not just inside the city of Shiloh, but any place near there from where you could see Shiloh. So if you live on a mountaintop nearby and you're able to see the city of Shiloh from where you live, then that would be considered part of the city for that purpose, and you could eat Kodshim Kalim, like the meat of a shlomim, or Maisa Sheni, there, just like in Shiloh itself. Over Yerushalayim, Lufnim and Achoyma, whereas when the Beis Mikdash was built in Yerushalayim, then you're limited to eating these things only within the wall of Yerushalayim. Again, in Zvachim, at the end of Zvachim, it has a long discussion of all this historical evolution of the Mishkan and the Bais Mikdash, and when you were allowed and when you weren't allowed, and why it is that Shiloh had this special status. One interesting thing the Gemara says over there is that since Yosef, the Mishkan Shiloh was in Yosef's territory, so since Yosef held back from looking where he wasn't supposed to, namely at Eishes Potiphar, therefore the Gemara says he gained the schus that while the Mishkan was in his territory, that wherever you could see Shiloh from there with your eyes, then you should be able to eat Kodesh and Karim and Maaseh Sheni there. That was the schus for him using his eyes properly. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, v'chan v'chan, in both places, in Shiloh and in Yerushalayim, there's a difference as far as Kodesh and Karim, but Kodesh, there's no difference. Kodesh necholim nim nakloim. Kodshe Kodshim could only be eaten within the curtains of the Azara. Literally, kloim means curtains. So we mean like the curtains they had around the Chotzer and the Mishkan. As we're going to see in the Gemara, there was a period of time when they were building the Beis Mikdash, where also they put up curtains as temporary markers. But basically, the Fnim Minakloim means within the wall or within the curtains or the wall, whatever marks off the Azara. So Kodshim Kalim, either way, in Shiloh or in Yerushalayim, you can eat them only inside the Azara. And the Mishnah says, here's another difference between Shiloh and Yerushalayim, not as far as when the Beis Mikdash, when the Mishkan or the Beis Mikdash was standing in them, but after it was destroyed. Kedushas Shiloh yesh acharei heter. As we just said before, the Kedusha of Shiloh had a heter after it, meaning after Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, then for the next period after that, again, until the Beis Mikdash was built in Yerushalayim, you were allowed to bring Korbanos anywhere else. Kedushas Yerushalayim, ein acharei heter, whereas the Kedusha of Yerushalayim does not have such a heter, even after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, you're not allowed to bring Korbanos anywhere else. And the Gemara, again, Rashi says, the Gemara in Zvachim over there learns it from Psukim. There's a Pasuk in Parashas Re'eh that says, you haven't yet come, Ela Menucha ve'Ela Nachla. Menucha, the Gemara says there means Shiloh, and Nachla means Yerushalayim, although the Gemara actually has several different opinions over there, what these two terms mean. Anyway, the point is, the fact that the Pasuk separates them shows that between Shiloh and Yerushalayim, there was a period of Heter. So there was a period when Bomas were Mutter. So now let's talk about that last point, about bringing Korbanos outside the Beis Mikdash after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Now, like this. The Gemara tells us in Menachos, at the end of Menachos, a story involving two sons of Shimon HaTzadik named Shimi and Chonya. To make a long story short, and the Gemara actually brings two different versions of the story, Chonya, there was an argument, there was a fight between them over the Kohen Gadolah. To make a long story short, the Gemara says there, this Chonya ran away to Yerushalayim. He built a copy of the Beis Mikdash there in Mitzrayim, and people were bringing Korbanos up there. The Gemara mentions over there that there was actually a pasuk in Yeshaya, that a nevuah from Yeshaya that indicated that one day such a thing was going to happen. Now the first question is so the first question is, were they actually worshiping Avodah Zarah over there, or was it actually L'shem Shemayim? And if it was L'shem Shemayim, was it allowed Al Pi Halacha? So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Shamaiti Shemakriven Bebeis Chonya Bizman Hazeh. Rabbi Yitzchak says, I have heard from my Rebbeim that you're allowed to bring Korbanos in this Beis Chonya in Egypt, even nowadays, after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed. The actual Beis Chonya itself, the historian Josephus tells us, was actually destroyed a couple of years after the second Beis Mikdash itself. So we're not talking in Rabbi Yitzchak's time, this place didn't stand anymore. But he means, in other words, if it was still standing, or if there was some place like that, would you be allowed to? So he says yes. Now, that means, the Gemara says, Kasavar. So evidently, that holds, Rabbi Yitzchak holds the following two facts. Number one, Beis Chonya la Beis Avodah Zarah. He holds that this Beis Chonya is not a place of Avodah Zarah, which the Gemara discusses that over there in Menachos, because obviously, if it was a place of Avodah Zarah, then there's nothing to talk about to bring Korbanos over there. And because Kasavar, the other thing is, Rabbi Yitzchak is holding, Kedusha Rishona, Kid Shalom Shaita, but like Kid Shalom Asid Lavai. That the original Kedusha, when they made the Har HaBayis as a holy place where Korbanos can be brought only there, where the Beis Mikdash can be built only there, he holds that that was a temporary thing. It didn't last for all time. Once the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, then it lost its Kedusha, and now it's just like after Shiloh was destroyed, where you're allowed to bring Korbanos anywhere else, which, of course, the Gemara is going to ask on him in a minute from our Mishnah. Namely, He says, Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, Kilay Vosim at Ota Elamanucha Velanacha. The Pasuk says that Moshe is telling the people, you're allowed to bring Korbanos elsewhere because you haven't yet come to the Menucha or to the Nachla. So again, Menucha zu Shilay, Nachla zu Yerushalayim. So the word Menucha refers to the Mishkan and Shilay. Nachla refers to the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. Menucha implies like a temporary place to settle, which is Shiloh, which was only temporary, only for a few hundred years. Nachla implies an ongoing Yerusha, which is Yerushalayim. But the point is, and Rabbi Yitzchak says, Makish Nachla l'menucha. The Pasuk is putting them together, Ela Menucha v'Ela Nachla, so it shows that there's a Hekish between them. Ma Menucha yesh acharei heter, just like after the time of Mishkan Shiloh, there was a heter to bring Korbanos anywhere else on private bummers. The same way, he says the same thing is true as far as the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. Fine, it's called Nachla in the sense that once the Beis Hamikdash is built there, then there's no place else in the world where the Beis Hamikdash is ever going to be built again. So he says, fine, it means the first Beis Hamikdash was built on Har HaMiriyah, on the Har HaBayis. After it was destroyed, eventually when they built the second Beis Hamikdash, it had to be in the same location. When the third Beis Hamikdash was rebuilt, Shibanim Meher of Yamenu, it will also have to be in the same location. But in between, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying, yes, the same way as you were allowed after Shiloh, the same way you were allowed after Yerushalayim. So therefore, he says, you'd be allowed to bring Korbanos in Beis Chonya. Now, obviously, again, that requires us to say that Beis Chonya is not a base of a desire. Otherwise, of course, there's nothing more to talk about. You can't bring Korbanos there anyway. So, Omru Lay, so now, later on, at some later point, after Rabbi Yitzchak said that, Omru Lay, they asked him, Amarka, did you really say that? Omru Lay, and he tells them no. Now, no could mean that he actually changed his mind, that he, at first he said that, but now he's changing his mind, and therefore he's saying that he didn't say it. Or the Rashba says, maybe it doesn't mean that he actually is denying that he said it. He's saying that because, as the Gemara is going to point out, it does contradict our Mishnah. Now, we're going to bring opinions of Tanoim that may bear on this, but Rabbi Yitzchak didn't want to bother defending that and quoting those Tanoim. So therefore, he said that I didn't say it, not that he really changed his mind, even though our Mishnah contradicts him, says the Rashba, because he has Tanoim that may be on his side, as we're going to discuss soon, but nevertheless, he didn't want to have to bother defending that, and therefore he just tried to evade it by saying, no, I didn't say it. But Omar Rava, Ha'elikim, Rava says, I swear in the Eibishter's name, Omra, Rabbi Yitzchak most certainly did say it, the Gamirna Lomine, as a matter of fact, I personally learned it from him, so there's no question he said it. So in that case, it means that he changed his mind, or it means, like the Rashba says, he doesn't care to defend it, but nevertheless, the fact is he did say it at one point. He did at least have that svara at one point. Or my time of Kahadra base, and now why is he changing his mind? Changing his mind completely, in other words, that he doesn't hold of it anymore, or changing his mind as that he doesn't care to defend it anymore. Mishum Kashu de Rav Mori. The reason is because of a question Rav Mori pointed out. De Mosi Rav Mori, because Rav Mori pointed out a contradiction. Our Mishnah says, Kedushas Shiva Yesh Acharei Heter, Kedushas Yerushalayim Ein Acharei Heter. Our Mishnah clearly says that after they built the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim, there's no more Heter ever again to bring Korbanos anywhere else. So Beis Chonya is off limits. And the Oid Tnan, furthermore, we learn in the Mishnah in Zvachim, Mishabol Yerushalayim Nesra Bamas, once they came and built the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim, then Bamas, private Bamas became also, V'loi Hoyalahan Oid Heter, there was never a Heter for them anymore, V'hi Hoysa V'Nachla. Yerushalayim is what's called in the Pasuk Nachla. So therefore, so between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Zvachim, it's very clear, not like Rabbi Yitzchak, there's no question you can't bring Korbanos anywhere nowadays. Which Tosfos asks in that case, and what was Rabbi Yitzchak thinking? The Amoraim have to know all the Mishnayos. So Tosfos explains that actually, what it is we're going to bring now a Machlokes Tanoim about the question of Kedusha Rishona Kidshal HaShaita. We're going to talk now about a Machlokes Tanoim. Was the original Kedusha effective for all time or not? And the Gemara is going to say that now, that maybe, that will bear on this question. So now, what it is, in other words, really, it doesn't bear on that question. Really, everybody agrees that after Yerushalayim, after the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, you can't bring Korbanos anywhere else. The Machlokas is on other points. For example, do we say that the Kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash is in effect such that even now, in principle, you could bring Korbanos there if you know the exact Mokam HaMizbeach and so forth. But so now, what it would be, in other words, Rabbi Yitzchak understood that Machlokas Tanoim to be bearing on this question also. But really, in other words, it's not so. Really, our Mishnah, which is a Stam Mishnah, as well as the one in Zvachim, both make it clear that whatever Machlokas you have on Kedusha Rishonah does not affect the question of whether you can bring Karbonos outside the Beis Hamikdash nowadays. So Rabbi Yitzchak understood that it did originally, which is why he held that. So therefore he said, I'm not bothered by the fact that these Mishnayos contradict me. But nevertheless, once he realized that no, that this Machlokas Tanoim is talking about a different point, then he retracted his opinion, or as the Rashba said, so now the Rashba says differently, that's the point. Maybe the Rashba learned differently than Tosfos. He didn't retract his opinion. He didn't want to bother defending it anymore now that he knows the Mishnayos, I mean, he knew all along the Mishnayos are clearly against him, but even though he could say that the Machlokas Tanoim, that one of those Tanoim does support my position, he didn't want to bother doing that, and therefore he just claimed that he didn't say it. So the Gemara says Tanoi. It's actually Machlokas Tanoim that bears on this. The Tanya, or the Tanan, really, it's a Mishnah in Adias. Omer of Eliezer, Shamaiti, I heard from my Rebbeim, Kshoy Bonin Behechel, when they were building the Hechel at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. So the Pasuk describes over there in Sefer Ezra how they went and rebuilt the Mizbeach when they first came to Yerushalayim, when they first came back to Eretz Yisrael after Kodesh's proclamation. Then they went and built the Mizbeach. Then they're starting to build the Hechel. So Rabbi Eliezer says, I heard from my Rebbeim, Oisin Kloyim LaHechel, they had to make curtains around the footprint, around the area where the Hechel is going to be, because they don't have walls yet. Or Kloyim LaZara, they also had to have curtains. They also have to have curtains around the perimeter of what's going to be the Azara. And Rashi explains, right now we're assuming that Rabbi Eliezer means that the reason they needed those curtains is because in order to bring Korbanos, in particular by a Korban Shlomim, the Pasuk says that it has to be brought El Pesach Oyo Moyed, which implies that there has to be an Oyo Moyed and it has to have a door. Now, if the building is destroyed, if there's no building over there, then there's no door, and therefore it sounds like Rabbi Eliezer is saying that in that case you couldn't bring Korbanos, therefore they had to put up curtains, so that way they would have something that could be called a door. And that way, during all those years, they're able to bring Korbanos. Because, in fact, Rashi points out the reason why that ended up being necessary, so first of all, it would have b'derech hateva, it would have taken them some time to build the Hechel anyway. But in any case, the Pesukim over there in Ezra describe how then the Kusim and other enemies of the Jews interfered and prevented them from finishing the building. We're going to talk about that a little bit in a couple of blocks. And so therefore it wound up that then there was an 18-year break when the Mizbeach was already built, but the Hechel was not yet, when the permission had been rescinded to build the Beis Hamikdash. Finally, they got permission again from Daryavesh, the son of Esther and Ahasuerus, and then it took them 4 years to finish it. So you have 22 years when there was a Mizbeach and no Hechel. So Rabbi Eliezer is saying that during all that time, they had to have curtains. So the pastors were understanding that the reason they had to have curtains is otherwise, during those 22 years, they would not have been allowed to bring Korbanos because there's no Pesach Oyomoy. So Rabbi Eliezer says, so they had to have curtains. Ella, the difference between those two sets of curtains was Shabahechel Boinin Mibachot, when the curtains that they had around the footprint of the Hechel, they had the building was then done outside those curtains. In other words, they didn't want that the builders should have to enter the area of the Hechel, so they set up the curtains on the inside of the area that eventually is going to be the Hechel, and then the building is built around those curtains, and then once the building is built, then they pull down the curtains and carry them out through the door. Uvazara, burning the name, whereas when they put the curtains for the Azara, then they could build inside of them. Then they could put curtains on the outside of the area where the footprint of the walls of the Azara is going to be, and then they would build inside of those curtains, and when they're done, then it would be more like, in other words, more like you have by a regular construction site, let's say, where you have curtains, where you have curtains and netting and whatever on the outside of the building, and then once you finish building, then you remove them. So only by the Hechel did they have to do differently, because they didn't want the builders to have to enter the actual area of the Hechel. Anyway, so the assumption is, why would they have needed these curtains in order to be able to bring Korbanos? Without them, the fact that they have a Mizbeach is not good enough. And the Mishnah continues, V'omer Rav Yeshua, Shamaiti, Rav Yeshua says, I heard from my Rebbeim, Shamakrivin Afasishein Bayis, that you are allowed to bring Korbanos even though there's no Beis Hamikdash. Urchin Kodshim Kodshim Afdishen Koyim. You're allowed to eat Kodshim Kodshim in the area that would be the Azara, even though there are no curtains or walls around the Azara. Kodshim Kailam and Maisasheni Afdishen Koyimah. You're allowed to eat Kodshim Kailam and Maisasheni in your Shalayim, even though there's no wall around your Shalayim. Mipnei, because Rabbi Yeshua says, Shikdusha Rishrena Kidshul Ashaita, the Kidshul Asidlovay. Because the original Kedusha that was given to the area of Yerushalayim and of the Beis Mikdash, that was Mekadosh it for its time and for all time. So even after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, that Kedusha still remains. Now, since Rabbi Yeshua is saying that, and the Pashtos, we assume that he's arguing with Rabbi Eliezer, because the fact that the Mishnah is bringing their opinions back to back, sounds like Rabbi Yeshua is arguing with some point that Rabbi Eliezer is implying. Miklal, did Rabbi Eliezer suffer like Kidshul Lossi Lovely? So the implication apparently is that Rabbi Eliezer says that it was not Mekadosh Lossi Lovely. That's why Rabbi Eliezer says, in order for them to bring Karbonis, it's not good enough that at one time there was a Heichel standing there. You have to have a new Heichel. And if you don't have a new Heichel and a new Azara, then you have to put up curtains to make do instead. So you see that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are arguing on that point. Well, then again, so Rabbi Yitzchak originally understood the Machlokas that way. And he understood, furthermore, that actually bears on the question. If we say like Kidshul Asid Lavay, then that would go as far even as saying that you could bring Karbanos elsewhere after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed. So again, we said he changed his mind, either because as the Gemara is going to say that's not the Machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua anyway, they could be arguing on a different point, or because again, even as Tosfos says, even if they argue on the question of Kedusha Rishayna, they would still both agree that you can't bring Karbanos anywhere else. The Machlokas would only be when you have a place of the Mizbeach, or when you know the place of the Mizbeach, but there's no Heichel, or you're allowed to bring Karbanos there. So Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi, Mimai, how do we know the fact the meaning of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua's Machlokas, where Rabbi Eliezer is saying that you needed curtains in order to bring the Karbanos, because you have to have an actual Heichel or something to stand in for the Heichel, and Rabbi Yeshua says you don't. Dilma de Kula Alma Kedusha Rishayna Kidshul Ashaita VeKidshul Asid Lavay. Maybe both of them agree that no, the original Kedusha lasts for all time. You don't need actual curtains in order to bring Karbanos, and there's no Machlokes. Umar Mai Dishmiya Leikama, Umar Mai Dishmiya Leikama. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are not necessarily arguing. Each one is bringing something that he heard from his Rebbeim. That's what Masechta Edius is, after all. Masechta Edius consists of things with different Tanoim, said Edius, that I heard from my Rebbeim, such and such. Okay, so Rabbi Eliezer is saying one Edius, Rabbi Yeshua is saying a different Edius, and there's no actual Machlokes. So you're going to say then, why, according to Rabbi Eliezer, would you need curtains? And the answer is, with tznius of Alma. You wouldn't technically need them in order to bring the Karbanos. Just for tznius purposes, just so people aren't staring into the area of the Azara and the area of the Heichel. But not that they actually needed them in order to bring the Karbanos. So there's not necessarily a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rishu on that topic. They can both agree that Kedusha Rishayna Kidshul Ashaita, the Kidshul Asid Lavay, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and of the Beis Mikdash is fully still in effect, and therefore that would mean that, so definitely that would mean not like Rabbi Yitzchak, you can't bring Karbanos anywhere else, but it would also mean that you could bring Karbanos on the Mokam HaMizbeach, even if you don't have anything else there, even if the Mizbeach itself is not built, even if the Heichel itself is not built. At various times in Jewish history, by the way, there were Chachamim who tried to act on that. For example, there's a very famous thing where it says that Rabbeinu Yechiel from Paris, one of the Baalei HaTosfos, came in the year 1257, in the year Hayalachim Yud Zayin, 1257, on the secular calendar. He moved from France to Eretz Yisrael, and he had intentions of bringing Karbanos. As long as we know the Makam HaMizbeach, we're saying over here, the halacha is that you're both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua agree that you're allowed to bring Karbanos. And it ended up being a huge discussion between him and other Chachamim of that time, whether such a thing is mutter. In later times also, you had this machlokas surfaced over and over again. I mean, practically speaking, you usually wouldn't be able to do anything about it anyway, because the Arabs have been in control of the place for hundreds of years. But in principle, if it were allowed, there's a well-known thing also that in the years after the Six-Day, in the first few years after the Six-Day War, the Rebbe used to tell people to not be in the old city of Yerushalayim on Erev Pesach afternoon, because in those years it might have been in principle possible to go up there without the Arabs harassing you, and therefore maybe you're obligated to bring the Korban Pesach, and therefore, and you're not Bederach Rechoka, and the Korban Pesach after all you can bring the Torah. Eventually, by the mid-70s, things had changed. The political situation had changed. It was such that if you were to try and go up there and bring a korban, you'd get yourself killed and you'd call the whole international incident. So then the Rebbe said it's not necessary anymore. Nobody's going to be able to bring a korban there anyhow, practically speaking. But in principle, you have this idea. Mind you, you have a machlokes between the Rambam and the Raivad on that. The Rambam holds, like we're saying over here, that it means Kedusha Rishon, Kedusha Lashayit, Kedusha Lashayit, means exactly that. It means that exactly what we're saying over here. You could bring korbanos even when there's no Beis HaMikdash, and it would mean also, therefore, that to go onto the Har HaBayis, into the areas where Tomei is not allowed to go, a person would still be Chayav Kardes for that, and so forth. And the Rambam explains that the reason is because the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash depends on the Shechina, and the Shechina has never left there. On the other hand, the Raivad disagrees with that. He says, fine, but this isn't the only Gemara on the subject. You have, first of all, we're going to discuss now the question of the Kedusha of the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Maybe Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash is the same thing. Maybe the Kedusha did expire with the Churban. So therefore, at best, maybe it would be also Dirabanan to go on to the Har HaBayis. Not necessarily would it be also Daraisa and Chayiv Kares. Tosfos also elsewhere discusses that maybe the other way around, maybe the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is still in effect and the Kedusha of the Har HaBayis and of Yerushalayim is not. So you have so according to Tosfos and the Raivad, you might well be allowed to go on to the Har HaBayis, at least on a Daraisa level. According to the Rambam, not. In general, the Halacha is accepted like the Rambam, which is why we don't go on to the Har HaBayis nowadays. Okay. Getting back to the Gemara. Ela Kihani Tanoi. Rather, we can say, though, that there is the following Machlokas Tanoim that Rabbi Eliezer might have been, not Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Yitzchok might have been using as an underlying basis for his original opinion that you're allowed to bring Korbanos elsewhere. So there could be there's a different Machlokas Tanoim on the question of whether the original Kedusha lasts for future times or not. So like the following Tanoim, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, now you have a Mishnah in Erchin that lists a few cities in Eretz Yisrael that were walled in the time of Yeshua ben Nun. And the Mishnah lists 9 cities over there. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi says, why did the Chachamim list specifically these cities? Aren't there a lot of other cities in Eretz Yisrael that were walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun? And the reason is, when the Jews came from Golos Bavel to build the second Mishnah, Matzus Elu Rekidshum, they found only these cities that they could identify, and so they declared them Kodesh. They declared them to have the Kedusha of walled cities. Aval HaRishonis Batlu Bishabatla Haaretz. But the original walled cities, their Kedusha was Batlu, once the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was Batlu. Alma Kasava, which shows that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi holds Kedusha Yishena Kidshal Shaita, the like Kidshal Asilavai. So he holds that the original Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, that they gave it in the time of Yeshua, expired when Eretz Yisrael was conquered and taken over by the Goyim. So now, when they came after Golos Bavel, then they had to be Makadosh again, whatever cities are ruled, and at that time they were only able to identify those 9. So the Gemara says, Raminu, but I have a contradiction. You're telling me that's what Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi holds. But a different Braisa says, Amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, v'chi elu bilvad hoyu. Are you telling me there were only those 9 walled cities in Eretz Yisrael? V'alekman nema shishim ir kol chevel argoiv. The Pasuk describes how in Evra Yardin, which for this purpose is considered part of Eretz Yisrael, that in Oig's territory alone, which half of Shevet Menashe eventually took over, there were 60 cities, the entire district of Argoiv, the entire palace district. Rashi explains on the Pasuk that Argoiv means palaces. Uchdiv kol elab orim bitzuris, and the Pasuk continues, all of those 60 were fortified cities, Choy Megvaya, with high walls. So in Evra Yarden, just in Oig's territory alone, there were 60 cities that were walled in the time of Yeshua ben Nun. What are you telling me? That in the whole Eretz Yisrael, there were only 9? Ela, so rather, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi says, Loma Manu Chachamim Asehu, why do the Chachamim list only the 9 that are in the Mishnah in Erchin? Shaksha Olu B'nei Agola, Matsu Ela V'Kidshum. Because when the people came from Golos, they found only these cities, and they were Makadosh then. The Gemara says, what do you mean, Kidshul? What do you mean they were Makadosh them? Hashta ha'ami loitz richla kedushin. Didn't you just finish saying that, or we're going to say now, and we didn't finish saying, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is going to say at the end of this braisa that you don't need to be Makadosh them, that the Kedusha from the original, that the original Kedusha from the conquest of Eretz Yisrael in Yeshua's time is still in effect. Ella, no, fine. What Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi means is matzua es elu umenno'u. They found these and they listed them. In other words, these are the only ones they were able to identify. But any other one, but he continues, Veloy Elabovad, in fact, the list of walled, of cities that are walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, which is Negea as far as Kriyas and Megillah, as we talked about earlier in our Perek, but it's also Negea as far as the dinim of selling a house in a walled city, which has differences from when you sell a house elsewhere. It's also, there's a difference as far as for the, also the walled cities, the ones that are walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, Mitzrayim have to go out of them. So there's a few nafkaminis between what, as far as when a city is walled from. So he continues, V'loy Eva Bovad, it's not only those nine that are listed in Erechin, Ela Nun, then you should know all of these mitzvahs that you have to send out the mitzvahs and that you read the Megillah on the 15th and that it has the dinim of a walled city as far as selling a house, that all of those apply, are all noyagin to the city. It's not on the list in Erchin, says Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yossi in this Braisa, doesn't matter. That list is only listing the ones that the Bnei Agoyla actually were able to identify at the time. The Bnei Shekedusha Rishayna Kidshul Shaita the Kidshul Asid Lovay. Because he says the original Kedusha was Makadosh Eretz Yisrael at that time, in Yeshua's time, and that continues to last forever. So we see that there's such an opinion, but the Gemara asked, Kasha did Rishmal, I did Rishmal. So now we have two different things that Rishmal but Rabbi Yossi said, which contradict each other. One of them, he said that only those nine have the Kedusha and the rest of them not, because he said Kedusha Rishayna was not Makadosh Eretz Yisrael. Now he's saying in this, but I said that it is. So he's contradicting himself. And the answer is, the Gemara says, Trei Tanoya Libid Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi. The answer is that there are two Tanoyim who disagree what Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi said. One held that Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi said that it was Makadosh Lasid Lavay, and the other one not. The Iboy Seim, or another possibility, Harda Balaza ben Rabbi Yossi Amra. The second Braisa, or the Rashba says maybe not the second Braisa, but one of these two Braisas, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi said it. Not Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, but rather his brother Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi Omer, when the Pasuk says about a walled city, it says Ashaloi Choyma, we learned this previously at Daf Gimel, that when the Pasuk says Ashaloi Choyma, and you have a Kriyuk Ksiv over there, where the Ksiv is Loi with an Aleph, meaning that it does not have a wall, and the Kri is Loi with a Vav, meaning that it does have a wall. So it means, even if it doesn't have a wall now, but it had a wall beforehand, then it still has the same Kedusha. Now, in other words, he says that the current status doesn't matter as much. Now, it's true that that doesn't necessarily bear exactly on the question of Kedusha, of Kedusha Rishona. So Rashi says that it means that he holds that Kedusha Rishona was not bottled because of the Churban. So here, the Rashba points out, what does one have to do with the other? He's saying that if you're talking during the time when the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael and the wall is taken down, then nevertheless it still has the Kedusha. How does that show that it applies when the Jewish people are b'chlal not living in Eretz Yisrael? Still, okay, the Rashba says, fine. The point is that we see that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi is talking about a related topic about this question of when the city has Kedusha and when not, but it doesn't, strictly speaking, depend on the wall. So therefore, we can say one of the braises that we said before in the name of Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi is actually from Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi. So which one? Maybe we can't be sure, but we can be sure that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi has an opinion on the subject. And therefore, it's not contradicting the fact that another one is from Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, his brother. The actual halacha, by the way, so again, you have a machloikas who's showing him, who is the halacha like? Tosfos discusses it on Amud Aleph, the Rambam discusses it, all the other Rishonim discuss the question. What is the final halacha in that? Do we say that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael from Yeshua's time is still in effect in later times? Or do we say it was bottle with Churban Bayis Rishon? Furthermore, you have within that a machlokas. What about the Kedusha that Ezra and his people did when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash? Is that one still in effect? So now, the Rambam paskins, and again, this is how the halacha is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that as far as the original Kedusha of Yeshua's time, that's gone. Once Eretz Yisrael was conquered and taken over by the Goyim, then that Kedusha lapsed. When they built the second Beis Mikdash, then they were Mekadosh Eretz Yisrael again. So therefore, now there the Rambam says, that one is not really in effect now also, but for a different reason, because most of the Jewish people do not live in Eretz Yisrael. So he says, when Mashiach comes, then they're going to have to be Mekadosh with the Kedusha Shlishis. Some Rishonim again argue with that, and they say that at least the Kedusha of Ezra's times should continue even to nowadays. And Amram himself says it lasts even after the Churban, because it depended not on conquest, but rather on settlement. But he says nowadays, actually what the Rambam says is a little more nuanced than that. He says, for certain purposes, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is still Daraisa nowadays, because it depends on them resettling in Eretz Yisrael, and since then there has always been Jews in Eretz Yisrael. But for certain mitzvahs, Afluyas Ba'aretz, for example, for Trumas and Maaseres, it requires, in addition, says the Rambam, that most of the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael, and nowadays we don't have that. So therefore, according to the Rambam, it comes out that some of the mitzvahs atloyes ba'aretz would be daraisa nowadays, but many of the others would, for example, shmita, but many of the others, for example, truma and maaser, would be only drabanan. There's a great deal of discussion about that, but that's in general how the halacha is accepted. But as far as the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash, that the Rambam says never ceased, even after the Churban Bayis Rishon, and that's the halacha, that's the accepted halacha, which is why we can't go on to the Har HaBayis, but it means, the flip side of it means that if we know the Makom HaMizbeach, then we would be able to bring Korbanos on it, even when the Beis Mikdash is destroyed. Okay, so now from here until the end of the Perek, and now we're done with the Gemara. Now we're done with the explanation of the Mishnayos of our Perek. Here now, for the rest of our Perek is almost like an appendix. Now, since we're in Masechta Megillah, which is talking about Megillas Esther, so the Gemara now becomes almost like Medrash Rabbah and goes through and darshins psukim from Megillas Esther, almost pasuk by pasuk. We're going to have a lot of digressions, but it lasts from here until the end of the Perek on Daf Yud Zayin. We're going to be darshining different psukim from the Megillah. So the Gemara starts off. The pasuk says, "Vayhi v'meach Hashverosh." So Amar Rav Levi, the Itamer Rav Yonasan, "Daber zeh mesoras b'yadenu ma'anshek nesak gerla." We have the following mesora from going back to Anshek Nesak Gerla. Kol makom shenema vayhi ena ela loshen tsar. Whenever the pasuk starts off a story by saying vayhi, then it's a loshen of trouble, because vayhi, the words vay and he themselves mean woe. The word vai means woe, and the word he is also an expression of mourning, like you have a pasuk in Yechezkel that refers to kinim v'heger v'hi. So therefore, vai he means a lashon of mourning, a lashon of sadness. So therefore, for example, vai hi b'mei Achashverosh, and what happened? Have a Haman. You have a Haman and a Zera. Another example, vai hi b'mei Shvoit Ashvoitim, the beginning of Megillas Rus begins also with vai hi, and right away have a Rav, a couple of psukim later, or actually right there in the same pasuk, it says that there was a famine. Another example from Parashas Bereishis, Vayhi ki heichal adam aroiv, when people started multiplying on the earth, then Vayar Hashem ki rabba ros adam. A couple of psukim later, it says that Hashem saw how evil people were being, and he had to bring them out. Vayhi benosam mikedem, you have about the story of the Dorat Flogger, when they traveled from the east, and what happens, the next pasuk, Havan ivna lanu ir. They're saying, let's build ourselves a city and a tower and rebel against Hashem. It was in the times of Amrothel, and also Mohammed, and you have the war of the four kings against the kings of Stone. When Yeshua was in, or we actually learned on Daf Gimel, he was right outside Yericho, and we said, we had the story over there about the Malach confronting him, and a Malach has his sword drawn in his hand, and as we learned on Daf Gimel, he was criticizing Yeshua for that you missed bringing the Korban Tumid, and now you're missing learning Torah. So there's another example of Vayihi being trouble. Another example, Vayihi Hashem is Yeshua. The pasuk says Hashem was with Yeshua, meaning that after Yericho was conquered, everybody knew that Hashem is on Yeshua's side. But the next pasuk continues, Vayimalu b'nei Israel, that some people, specifically Ochan, violated the Cherem that Yeshua made and took from the spoils of Yericho, which caused a lot of trouble. Another example, by he ishach min ha-ramasayim, the pasuk starts off by introducing Elkanah, the father of Shmuel. So it says, by he, there was a man from Ramasayim, and a couple of psukim later, it says that kiyas chana ohi b'ashem sarga rachma, that he loved Chana, his first wife, but Hashem had closed up her womb, that she was infertile. So there's another example of by he being trouble. Another example, by he ki zok in Shmuel, or kasher zok in Shmuel, is actually the Lashon HaPasuk, when Shmuel was old. Then the pasuk says, then the next pasuk, v'loy hochul bonav v'drachav, his children, his sons, did not follow in his ways, and they weren't as honest and lefnim mishuras hadin as he was. Another example, by he drav David b'chol drachav maskil, it says David was successful in everything that he was doing, and the next of Hashem imayin, Hashem is with him, but right after that it says by he shol oyenes David, that shol is looking badly on David and getting jealous of him. Another example, by he ki yoshev amelach b'vesoy, it says when David was sitting in his palace, and what happened? The Navi comes and tells him, Rak atalei siv na'abayis, you won't build the Mishmikdash, it's going to be left for your son Shlomo. The actual pasuk Rak atalei siv na'abayis is from much later. That's from Sefer Melachim, when Shlomo is dedicating the Mishmikdash, and he tells over how Hashem didn't allow David to build it. The actual pasuk that says on the side of it here is, Ha'ata tivnili bayis l'shivti. The Navi tells him in Hashem's name, do you think you're going to build the house for me to dwell? So we see that the Vayehi is associated with Tsar, that David felt bad he can't build the Mishmikdash. So therefore, so you see that Vayehi always means the Lashon of Tsar. Someone says, what do you mean, Vaksiv? Vayehi bayim ha'shmini. What about Parashas Shmini begins with the word Vayehi? On the eighth day when they're dedicating the Mishkan, V'tanya, and you learn in a braisa, Oysa yom ha'sa simcha lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu k'yom shenivru b'shamayim v'aref. That day was as joyful before Hashem as the day when heaven and earth were created. And we know that Tivacha Vayibayim HaShmini, or Tivasim Vayibayim HaShmini, Vayibayim, whatever, Yoyim Echad. It uses the same word by he and Yoyim, by both of them. So it means that the day when they completed the Mishkan and set it up, that from now on it's going to be used every day and Aaron and his sons are going to serve there, was as great a simcha as when heaven and earth were created. Now, Marsha says, I mean, if we're learning from Vayehi, the Gemara could have just as well learned from any of these Vayehis that we said were trouble. What it means is the Gemara knows, of course, the day the Mishkan was finished was a day of Simcha, no question about that. So we have to find, where do we find a Vayehi that has to do with Simcha is when Bria is, when heaven and earth were created. The Gemara says, okay, but it wasn't a complete joy. Hashchiv Nadav and Avavu. After all, Nadav and Avavu passed away on that day. So in that sense, it still wasn't a complete Simcha. Okay, the Gemara says still, by he the Shmoinim Shana Va'abameyashana, it says it was in the 480th year since Yitzias Mitzrayim that Shlomo started building the Mishmikdash, and there's no trouble shortly after that. Okay, eventually, of course, the Mishmikdash was destroyed, but that was a long time later. What about when Yaakov saw Rachel by the well? And again, Marashah says, okay, later on in the parak, it says that Rachel was infertile, but it's not like with Elkanah and Hannah, where it's like a couple of psukim later. Here it's many psukim later that it mentions the point that she was infertile, so it's not really directly connected. So there's no tsar in connection with Vayehi Kasher Yaakov as Rachel. What about the Torah tells us, Kaka, that by Maaseh Bereishis, it was evening and morning of first day. The second day of Maaseh Bereishis, the third, and many others. So how do you say as a blanket statement that whenever it says Vayehi, it means Tzara? Now, there is a Medrash, actually, there is a Medrash Tanchuma, where one of the Chachamim, Reb Shmuel Menachmeni, still sticks to his guns and says, no, without exception, every single time that it says Vayehi, it means that there is trouble. So the Chachamim asked him from a number of such psukim, and he showed them how even then. For example, it means there was still the tsar from the fact that the light that Hashem created on the first day was hidden away only la'asid lavay, so people don't get to enjoy it. There is actually a Torah from the Baal Shem Tov on that that associates that with the fact that how was light and how was the whole Maaseh Bereishis created with Tzimtzum. So that's the tsar that we're talking about, like Hashem, so to speak, had to put himself to a degree of tsar in order to create the world. He says, what about the other days of Maaseh Bereishis? He says, okay, but not everything that was created then is perfect. You see that things that are created during Maaseh Bereishis are only raw materials and you still have to fix up. So on and so forth. So he holds without exception that Vayehi means that there's tzar. But the Gemara over here is not accepting of that, because on the face of it, again, you have psukim where that doesn't seem to fit. Rav Ashi says, okay, here's the deal. When you have the word Vayehi by itself, sometimes it's one, sometimes the other. It could be tsar, but not necessarily. But when it says Vayehi bimei, eina ela loshen tsar. When it says Vayehi bimei specifically, then it's a loshen of tsar. Now, why is that? So Marsha says, because bimei by itself means in the days of. So, in other words, the Megillah, for example, we're going to say there's five places in Tanakh where it has this phrase Vayehi bimei. It could have just said Bimei. If the Megillah had started Bimei Achashverosh, it would mean the same thing. So therefore, the Vayihi is extra to tell us that it means Tsar, as we said, that it's a combination of the words Vay and He, which refer to mourning. The Maharal has a different point on it. He says, B'chlal, why are we saying Vayihi is Loshen Tsar anyway? He says, because take off the Vav, which means and you have the word Yehi, it will be, which means something that's like unsettled yet. It's something that's yet going to happen. And therefore, there's Tsar involved. You don't know what's going to happen. You're not at rest. You're still in movement. And therefore, he says, when it says Vayihi Bimei, which is on top of that, it's associating it with Yomim, with days, with the days of the world, which is everything is constantly in motion, in flux. You never know what's going to happen. Then that shows definitely that we're talking about a time of Tsar, a time of a lack of Menucha. So, Chamisha Vayihi Bimei Havu. So there's five places in Tanakh where it uses the expression Vayihi Bimei. Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh, Vayihi Bimei Shoyt HaShoytim, Vayihi Bimei Amrotho, Vayihi Bimei Ochoz, and Vayihi Bimei Yehoyaki. So each of those means trouble. Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh, we said that it means that there was Haman and his Gzeira. Vayihi Bimei Shoyt HaShoytim means, so we said there was a famine. Now the Medrash, actually, this same Medrash Tanchuma that goes through these explains it's more than just, for example, with Vayihi Bimei Shoyt HaShoytim that there was a famine. Good deal, there were lots of famines in history. This one, it was particularly bad because Shoyt HaShoyftim means that when the Shoyftim were giving the Jewish people Musar and telling them you have to do the right thing, the people, instead of listening to them, were fighting back against them. Shoyt can also mean to punish, so that the people themselves were punishing the Shoyftim and saying, not only we're not going to listen to you, we're going to beat you up and prevent you from saying anything against us. So that was the big tragedy. Vayihi Bimei Amrotho, again, the tragedy is not just that there was a war, there's been lots of wars in history. The tragedy was, the Medrash says, that the four kings intended that Avraham should come into the war and then be killed. They didn't know, of course, that Nisim are going to happen for Avraham. And if Avraham had been killed, it would have been a catastrophe for the world. So therefore, it says Vayihi Bimei on that. Vayihi Bimei Ochoz, so the Pasuk introduces with that by saying that there was a war, that the king of Aram and the king of the Aseret HaShevatim were fighting against Ochoz. But again, there's been lots of wars in Jewish history. The Medrash explains there, the real tragedy was that Ochoz had previously, he wanted to make the Jewish people forget the Torah. He ordered that all the shuls and all the Batim Medrash should be closed in order that there shouldn't be any Talmid Chachamim, anybody who knows Torah, for the next generation. The Medrash quotes him as saying that he said, if there's no baby goats, there's not going to be any mature goats. So if I prevent the kids from learning Torah, then eventually nobody will know any Torah at all. So that's the real Vayihi Bimei, that's the real catastrophe, which is why we introduce it with that. And the fifth one, Vayihi Bimei Yehoyakim. So in Yehoyakim's time, he himself was killed. He had the first golos of the Jewish people to Babel. But the catastrophe goes beyond that. In particular, the Medrash mentions over there, Marashah refers to it over here. When Yirmiyahu came with the scroll of Megillas Eicha to Yehoyakim, and instead of listening to it and paying attention and doing tshuva, Yehoyakim ripped it up and threw it into the fire, and everybody was crying out about that. That was the beginning of the catastrophe, of the disaster of the Churban, and therefore we use the word Vayihi Bimei on that. So Vayihi Bimei definitely means that there's trouble afoot. Vayihi was saying, all Gemara is saying, maybe, maybe not. Reb Shmuel Bar Nachman is saying over there in that Medrash that it always means. Since we're talking about now the Gemara is going to digress a little bit to talk about some Masoris that we said before, that Masoris Biyadenu Ma'anshech Nes Sagdola, about the word Vayihi. So now we're going to have a couple of other Masoris that Rav Levi quotes. So Va'omer of Levi, Jobas and Masodas Biyadenu Ma'avisenu, we have the following Masoda from our ancestors. Omotz Va'amatzia Achim Havu. Omotz, who was the father of Yeshaya, and Amatzia, who was one of the kings of Yehuda, were brothers. The Gemara says, Ma'ay Kamash Malon. Okay, and so what? The answer is, Kihod Omer of Shmuel Ma'achmeni Omer of Yenison. Reb Levi wants us to know with this Masoda that it bears out what Reb Shmuel Ma'achmeni said in the name of Reb Yenison, that Kol Kala Shitznua Beveis Chamia, any daughter-in-law who's near stick in her father's house, in her father-in-law's house, Zoicha V'yotzim Menem Malachim and Nevi'im. She will have the schus that in the future, kings and Nevi'im will descend from her. Menolon, where do we learn that from? Mitamar. We learn that from Tamar, the daughter-in-law of Yehuda. Dichtiv, you have the story over there when Tamar has disguised herself in order to have Yehuda have relations with her so she can have children. And the pasuk says by Yir'ehel Yehuda, that Yehuda saw her disguised by the side of the road, by Achshavel the Zoyna, he thought she was a Zoyna, ki chisus aponehel, because she covered her face. And I said, what do you mean? Mishum the kiss aponehel, by Achshavel the Zoyna, what's the logic? Zoynas usually uncover their faces. Adarabah, if he sees her sitting with a veil over her face, means she's not a Zoyna. El or no, what it means is Mishum de Kista Panel Bavais Chamia, because previously when she had lived in Yehuda's house, when she married Er, and then when she married Oinon, and she kept her face covered out of Pnius, the lawyer had a Yodala, so therefore Yehuda didn't quite know what she looked like. So now when he saw her sitting by the side of the road, he didn't have to that's her, because now, yeah, we're saying now her face was not covered. But now he didn't recognize her face because previously she had kept it covered in his house. And what do we mean? Zachs of a Yatsim and a Malachim and a Vim. She had the schus that kings and Nevi'im descended from her, namely Melachim Midavid. So you have from her, she eventually, she had with Yehuda Peretz and Zerach, and Peretz is the ancestor of David HaMelech. So kings we see, had David and his whole dynasty came from her. Nevi'im, so where do we see that she had Nevi'im come from her? There we need, the Omer of Levim, Asuras, the Adenim Avasenu, Omer Tzva Amatya Achim Haru, Uchtiv Chazon Yishayo Ben Omer. The Yeshaya's Nevuah is introduced that he's Yeshayahu, the son of Omer. The implication is that Omitz himself was a Navi, because we're going to learn later on in the Perek that when the Pasuk introduces a Navi as Pliny ben Pliny, means that his father was a Navi as well. So therefore it means that both Yeshaya and Omitz were Naviim, and they're descended from Tamar, because they're descended from, so that's the point. Because Omitz is a brother of Amatzia, the king of Yehuda, so therefore obviously he's descended from Tamar as well. So is Yeshaya. So therefore we see that Tamar had Naviim descended from her. Marsha points out that, I mean, David and Shlomo are also Nevi'im. Later on in the Perek, we're going to list the 48 Nevi'im, and we're going to say that David and Shlomo are on the list. Fine, but they weren't regular Nevi'im. They had Nevuah occasionally. Here we're talking about Yeshaya and Omer, who had regular Nevuah. So therefore, that's the importance of knowing that Omer is a brother of one of the kings of Yehuda. Okay. The Omer of Levi, another Masorah of Levi brings for us, David and Masorah Yadenim Avasenu, we have the following Masorah from our ancestors, Makim Ored Enim in Amida. The space of the Ored and the Kodesh HaKadoshim was not actually part of the measurement, meaning that the Kodesh HaKadoshim measured the same with or without the Ored. Because of course, you know, the idea is that the Ored is, even though it's a gashmiyistik object, it's a ruchniyistik type of, it's a ruchniyistik gashmiyistik object, and therefore in our world it didn't take up any space. Tani nami hochi, we learned similarly in the Braisa. Oren sha'asa Moshe, the Oren that Moshe made, which eventually was placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Beis Mikdash, yesh le eser amas b'chol ruach, there were 10 amas on every side of it, meaning the total size of the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Beis Mikdash was 20 by 20 amas. If you were to go and measure from one side of the Oren to the nearest wall, and from the other side of the Oren to the nearest wall, you would come out with 10 amas each, even though the Oren itself should reduce the amount of space that there was there. Ochtiv. And the pasuk says v'lifnei advir, but in front of the dvir is the wall that separates the kodesh from the kodesh hakadoshim. In front of that, where was esrim ama oruch, there was a length of 20 amos, meaning the kodesh hakadoshim was 20 by 20 amos. Uchtiv, and the pasuk says knaf akruva echad esr amos, the wings of one kruv. They had besides the kruvim on the oren, there were also big wooden kruvim plated with gold that Shlomo made in the mizmikdash. So the wings of one kruv were eser amos, were 10 amos in total, 5 amos for each wing. Uchnaf ha-kruv ha-echad eser amos, and the other kruv also took up 10 amos. So if the kruvim are taking up 20 amos, oren gufe hechahava, where would the oren itself be? There'd be no room for it. Ela lav shnamin abenesso yomid, that shows that it was standing there b'derech nes. Now the Turei Evan actually says, I mean, what kind of proof is that? The kruvim were higher than the oren. There was still plenty of space underneath them for the oren. So does Zachronim talk about that the proof rather is not so much from the Kruvim, but rather the Gemara, and Baba Basra has a whole discussion of it. The Gemara uses the Psukim over there to show that the Kruvim themselves stood B'derech Nes, because there wouldn't have been room for them B'derech HaTeva. But in addition, the Gemara learns from Psukim over there that described the Kodesh HaKadoshim that the space where the Kruvim stood itself was empty, in the sense, again, the Kruvim were like the Oren itself. They were there and not there at the same time. So the same thing, the Oren was the same way that it was there and not there at the same time, that even though it was there, it didn't take up space, and you would measure the Kodesh HaKadoshim and find the measurement to be the same with or without them. Okay. So now we're going to get into the Megillah as a whole. So now the Gemara is going to start off with many times when a chacham would begin his drosha on something in Torah, he would begin first with a different pasuk in order to make a pischa, it's called, like an opening, like to give us a perspective on what we're going to be learning now. In fact, you find, for example, Medrash Rabbah on Esther and on Rus and on Eicha begin with many such psichas, where the Chachamim would begin with a passage from a different part of Tanakh and then show how that relates to the topic at hand. It's sort of like also you have in a Maimon Chassidus that begins with a pasuk, and you have a question on the pasuk, and then from there we get into the topic of the Maimon. So here, now the Gemara is going to bring a bunch of such psichas. Rabbi Yonasan Pasach L'Pischa L'Ai Parshas Me'Hacha. Rabbi Yonasan, when he was darshaning on the Megillah, began his drasha with the following pasuk. The pasuk says in Yeshaya, the Novi is talking about how Hashem is going to completely destroy the kingdom of Babel. V'kamti aleihem v'goyim. Hashem says, I will stand up against them. And he continues, v'chrati l'babel. I will cut off from Babel, shame, a name, usha'or, and a remnant. The nin and a rulership, the neched and a grandson, Ne'um Hashem, so says Hashem. So Rabbi Yonasan explained that what does each of these phrases mean? Shame Zaksav, when it says Hashem will cut off shame, means that they won't have a script anymore. Like this, in other words, Rashi says, nowadays they have to use a script that came from a different nation. In those times, actually, in Babel and in other parts of the world, they used to use something, you can find examples of it in museums all over the place, called cuneiform, where they would take their writing shaped like wedges, so that disappeared. Nowadays, nobody writes like that anymore, so they've rediscovered it, and they're able to read those documents, but nobody writes in that script anymore, which is what it means in the Nevor that Hashem is going to cut off their script. Sha'or Zeloshen, when it says that Hashem is going to remove their sha'or, that means their language. So Tosfos says, what do you mean? The Aramaic language they still speak in later times. So Tosfos says, we don't mean the Aramaic language. We mean the special language that kings would use. In many places in those times and much later, it was very common that kings and noblemen would use a special language of their own. So therefore we mean that language, which again, you have, they found in these inscriptions, they found there was a language called Akkadian, which they used in Babel for official purposes, for diplomatic and official purposes. And yeah, again, that became extinct. So that was the fulfillment of this pasuk. Nin Zemalchus, when it says that Hashem is going to remove from Babel Nin, that means any vestige of kingship. Also, Marshall points out, the word Nin also means a son, so it means literally they had no children to continue their Malchus. Vonechad Zubashti. And when it says a grandson, that or grandchild, that refers to Vashti, who was a daughter of Belshazzar, and therefore great-granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. So in other words, Rabbi Yonasan would begin his drasha on Megillas Esther by pointing out, the question is, why do we need the whole beginning of Megillas Esther? Why do we need to know what happened to Vashti? The answer is, Rabbi Yonasan is telling us, you should know that the fact that Vashti was killed, that fulfilled finally the last part of the Nevuah of Yeshaya, that the whole kingdom above all and any vestige of it is going to be destroyed. Another one, Rabbi Shmuel Menachmeni Pasach LaPischa LaHai Parshas Mehocha. Rabbi Shmuel Menachmeni used another pasuk in Yeshaya. The pasuk is Tachas Anatzut Yala Berosh, instead of the Natzut, which means like a thorn bush, instead of that a Berosh, a cypress tree is going to grow. Besachas Asirpad Yala Hadas, instead of the Sirpad, which is another kind of thorn bush, instead of Hadas will grow. So this refers to the events of the Megillah. Tachas Anatzut means Tachas Haman Arosha She'asa Atzmei Avodah Zarah. The Natzut refers to Haman who made himself an Avodah Zarah, and we know the word Natzut means that. Earlier in Yeshaya, he describes how Sancheiriv is going to invade Eretz Yisrael and take over all the Natzutim and all the Nahalulim, which means Nahalulim, which means places of Avodah Zarah. So instead of the Natzut, instead of Avodah Zarah, Yala Berosh, instead there's going to grow a Berosh, Zemordechai, Shenikra Rosh L'chol HaBesamim. The word Berosh is short for Besamim Rosh. Mordechai is called the chief of all the spices. Shenem of Atakach L'chol HaBesamim Rosh. As the Pasuk says, you should take for yourself chief spices and use them to make the Shemen HaMishra and the Torah. And it continues, Mordurur, the first ingredient you should take is Mordurur, or Metagamin and Moridoki, and we translate in Aramaic, Mordurur is translated Moridoki, pure Mur, which is like the name Mordechai. So we see that Mordechai is the chief of the spices. So far we're saying instead of the Natzot, instead of the thornbush like Avodah Zarah, you're going to have Berosh, the chief of the spices, Mordechai. tachas a sirpod, when it says instead of a sirpod means tachas vashti or rasha, bas noish and lochanetzar rasha, instead of the wicked vashti, the great granddaughter of lochanetzar rasha, and he's called sirpod, shesorach refidas beis Hashem, he burnt the bed of the house of Hashem, meaning the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where Hashem's Shekhinah rested, v'chtiv refidasei zahav, as we see the Beis HaMikdash is described, the Kodesh HaKadoshim particularly, is described refidasei zahav, his bed, his couch, is of gold, meaning the kapodas. So instead of him, instead of the sirpod, sorach refidas, yala hadas zu Esther, instead there's going to be a hadas, namely Esther at Sadekat, shenikra hadasa, shenemra yi'oimen at hadasa. And the pasuk finishes off. It says this will be for a name for Hashem. Zu mikra megillah. This refers to the fact that we read the megillah. Marsha explains the megillah itself doesn't have Hashem's name, but we say a bracha on it. There we mention Hashem's name. Lo ois olam lo yikaris elu you made Purim. And when it says it'll be a sign forever that will not be cut off, means the days of Purim, whereas the pasuk says that Purim will never go, will never cease from among the Jewish people. So that was his ischa for now darshining on Megillah Esther. Okay, and we'll continue with more of them tomorrow, Beth Hashem.